SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three now, and just about 10 minutes or so to the last of the four races we can take on these mornings. Two more days, of course, of fun action from Royal Ascot. Tomorrow, the Norfolk and the Hampton Court, Group 2, Group 3, the Ribblesdale, Group 2, and then the big Gold Cup, the 2.5 mile Ascot Gold Cup, and with the Queen. She won. Was that 2 years ago already? I think 2 years ago that she won the Gold Cup. And then on Friday, more two-year-olds with the Albany. And then the King Edward, the Commonwealth, and the Coronation. Those are the big ones. And then the two handicaps to close out. Sandringham and the Duke of Edinburgh. Borough. And Saturday, of course, the big race, the Diamond Jubilee. After we get off the air today, you do have Wesley Ward involved in both of the last two races in the Royal Hunt Heritage Handicap and the Jersey. And Wesley, in the nightcap, the afternoon cap for us, 12:35, that's a Hempem Poure's race, the Artie Schiller, Joel Rosario over to ride. Okay, Wesley is so great when it comes to, he gives everybody, including, some jocks that he has looked after, guys that he even, rode against, and he's just generous to a fault and amazing. Master Marion for Wesley in the Royal Hunt Cup, the mile straight. That comes as the fifth after we're off the air right at noon. All right, so you want to keep rooting along with Wesley. Did not have a good start with Chelsea Cloisters. Didn't start well, and race was over for her virtually immediately. So looking to get Wesley. These days now, Wesley's got to get himself a win, or at least one, over the course of the 5 days. John White is going to join us. We didn't get a chance to connect with John early in the week, so here he is. And, John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. There was quite an interesting race that they held at Emerald Downs last Sunday.
Oh, I'm glad you brought this up.
The not in any rocking chair starter allowance, a 6-furlong race for trainers age 90 and older. In fact, the conditions of the race for three-year-olds and up, which have started for a claiming price of $3,500 or less in 2017-18, and whose trainer was born on or prior to June 6, 1928. And I got such a kick out of that race and thought it was just a lot of fun there at Emerald that they put it on. And they had a field of five entered in this race for trainers 90 and older, and it turned out to be the oldest trainer in the race who won it, Arturo Arboleto, whose Ragazzi Cat went wire to wire and won by 2.5 lengths. Trey Lonnie finished second for 90-year-old Bob Meeking, and Ryan Walt, who was trained by 91-year-old H.R. Pat Mullins, finished fourth. Some Stormcat, who was trained by 90-year-old Ira Rhodes, was a late scratch, was scratched at the gate. So, but that was really, really, I thought, interesting. It reminded me of a race at Playfair in Spokane on the other side of the state in 1977. At that particular Playfair meeting, we had a plethora of venerable horses that were actually running quite well in the lower claiming ranks. And one morning in the publicity office where I had a little spot while working for the racing form, I was waiting for him to draw the feature race, and I mentioned to Jim Price, the track announcer and the publicity director, I said, you know, we've got so many of these horses that are 10, they're 10 and older. I said, you know, they ought to write a race here for 10-year-olds and up. And Jim, being a very sharp publicity guy, said, you know what, that's actually a good idea. Let's go see the racing secretary. So we walked into Buck Hopkins' office, and Jim says, John just had this idea. What do you think? He says, you know, we got so many of these 10-year-olds here and older that are running well. He says, what do you think about having a race for 10-year-olds and up? And, you know, I've worked at tracks from Keystone to Bowie to Sportsman Park, Louisiana. I mean, where I've worked from coast to coast. And believe me, a lot of racing secretaries would have said, And Buck says, hey, I think that's a neat idea. And so he cards it as an invitational, and it was the rocking chair handicap for 10-year-olds and up. And what was kind of neat about that race, when it was run for the first time that year in 1977, it was won by a horse called Bouncing Kim, who was 10 years old, but when he was a 2-year-old, he had won the biggest race in the Northwest, the Washington Futurity, which is now the Gottstein Futurity.
Sure.
And so that kind of helped get the race off the ground. And I ended up leaving the Northwest to work at all over the country and move permanently to Southern California in 1981. But that race continued on at Playfair for many, many years. So that race for the trainers 90 and older sure brought back some memories for me. And I really enjoyed what Emerald Downs did with that.
It was really nice, and I've got it here on the corner of the desk, and I'm delighted you brought it up, because it was really a nice idea, and it also showcased, honestly, the remarkable longevity that the game seems to foster. I mean, it's not unusual. I mean, we've had South Florida. You've had guys that, you know, pressed into their 90s, and I'm sure elsewhere that we're not even thinking of, but it is amazing, you know, getting up early and the lifestyle. And I mean, you would think it's tough on people physically and so forth, but in fact it is amazing how many participants are look at John Nayrud. Is there a better example than Nayrud? One of 103, I think, when he went.
Well, that guy was amazing. There's no doubt about it in many ways. But and when you think about it, and I hadn't thought about this till right now since we're discussing it, but Bob Baffert really kind of is just a young whippersnapper at the age of 65. So how many more triple crowns does that guy have up his sleeve, considering he can keep going and going and going?
Yeah, fair point. Look at Lucas, obviously, and at his 80s, and yeah, that's that'd be a good featured conversation or an article of some kind. And by the way, speaking of articles, we mentioned it at the time, and now you made me think of it because of another, you know, famed elder, long gone, but Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons' name, of course, was invoked so much during this Triple Crown, and then ultimately as part of Bob Baffert and he sharing the distinction of sending out two Triple Crown winners each. And Lenny Shulman had been working since even before the Derby, before the Triple Crown started, on a Sonny Jim feature, and it's in the magazine this week, the story we talked about with Lenny. In fact, maybe I really should probably get Lenny on as early as tomorrow and before we go on vacation. So those of you that haven't received your Blood Horse yet, it's only in the magazine. I hope that somehow they'll get it online, because it is something that everybody's going to want to read. Lenny found relatives. He found people that worked for Sonny Jim.
Wow.
It's unbelievable.
Wow.
What the research, I know Lenny is really proud of this piece and that a lot went into it. So be aware and seek it out.
Well, I enjoyed Lenny's blood recap in the magazine of the Belmont Stakes. He stepped up and did his usual outstanding job. and even had the little tidbit in there where Baffert, he was walking away at the Baffert barn, and Baffert said, "Where are you going? Don't you want to come and see the Derby winner?" Meaning Justify. But Lenny is, and I'll tell you, one of my highlights of Belmont weeks when you had Lenny and Steve Haskin on, because
yeah, it's fun.
It doesn't really get any more entertaining than those two guys when you get them going.
They are like the Abbott and Costello or the Martin and Rossi, the Stiller and Mirror, actually, probably the most. it's hard to know what the most appropriate comedic pair might be. But no doubt, and got great feedback. As whenever we get them together, it's more fun when they're face to face, because when they're on the when I've got one live, and these days it's Lenny live and Steve on the phone, it's hard. But when they're there egging each other on, it's funny. Then we had the bagels as props. fold that in. Well, speaking of the Triple Crown, John, the Hammer has been working feverishly since even before Justify got back to California, and with closing weekend upon us at Santa Anita, he's going to parade. It'll be a perfect finish to the long Santa Anita winter, spring, early summer meet. Some thoughts about things winding down. We won't talk to you for 2 weeks after this.
Well, it's going to be certainly a big highlight of the entire season for a Triple Crown winner and an undefeated Triple Crown winner to be showcased at Santa Anita. They're giving away Triple Crown posters to the first 4,000. The posters are free with paid admission, and so they'll have the Wonder Horse, as Rick Amberley calls him. I call him Super J, so we're all coming up with our own nicknames for Justify, which I think is justified for him to come up with maybe some nicknames when you reach his level of achievement. But I think as we go down the road, as I said before, we're just going to look at what happened here. And, you know, Bob Baffert makes a good point, as he usually does, that this happened so quickly, you know, and that's, even with American Pharoah, we knew he was really good as a two-year-old, and all of these Triple Crown winners, because all the Triple Crown winners had raced at two, and for this guy to just burst on the scene in February, and what he achieved from February to June is still, I mean, I think it's taking the entire racing world a little bit to kind of have it sink in of what we've witnessed, because it happened in such a short period of time. And he's an amazing horse from many perspectives. I mean, his demeanor, they talk so much about his demeanor, and that's so key, because for him to deal with these crowds and the rain and, you know, so much thrown at him. And But I really think that there was a huge tip-off. Of course, the big tip-off was his first race, because right then and there you kind of thought, uh-oh, what do we have here? In fact, I was just going back, and I'd written my Express Bet column the week after Justify's, the Wednesday following Justify's maiden win. It was mainly a recap. Well, in fact, it wasn't the maiden win. It was the allowance win in the mud. And I came across that column again. And the main part of the column is a recap of the San Felipe, which was controversial because you had McKenzie and he was disqualified. And that tremendous stretch run with Bolt D'Oro.
John, hold on 1 second. Let me pick up. Let's pick up. And you know, this is Cracksman at way odds on. But let's pick up the race here for the second half. Here's your Prince of Wales.
but has the advantage here. Royal Julius, Hawkbill in between them. Cracksman is now asked to stretch on the outside. He's followed by Poet's Word, then Cliffs of Moher and Desert Encounter. Here comes Cracksman, but Poet's Word is going to lay down a challenge on the outside. Cracksman gets to the front. Poet's Word is almost level with him, though, under James Doyle, and has just got into the lead. It's Poet's Word. Is this the one for Sir Michael Stout? Cracksman in second place. He can't go with Poet's Word, and it's Poet's Word and James Doyle. Cracksman in second place, trying hard, but Poet's Word will lower his colours and make history for Sir Michael Stout by winning the Prince of Wales' Stakes. Poet's Word has beaten Cracksman. Hawkbill back in third, and Cliffs of Moher in fourth.
So Poet's
Word. Well, those that were going to single Cracksman, that doesn't work today. Poet's Word, the five-year-old for Sir Michael Stout and James Doyle, second choice at 5-1, and that's going to certainly boost along the pick four with two more races to go, including, when we say two more, the Royal Hunt. The Royal Hunt has a field of 32. So things could get very squirrely for those of you that are partaking the pick four. So I could sense, wanted to get live there because it was becoming apparent that the Cracksman might be in a little hot water, and he was. Dottori just didn't have enough horse, period. He got to the front easily enough, but Poet's Word waited as well. Doyle pounced on him. When he moved, Cracksman, that's when Poet's Word moved, and he was easily best to the wire. So there you go. Little upset in the minor upset in the Prince of Wales.
Boy, and Poet's Word had been absolutely no match for Cracksman at Ascot last October, beaten seven lengths by Cracksman. So the tide has turned between those two with the victory today by Poet's Word. What a great trainer, Sir Michael Stout, for sure. And I mean, it shows you how things can change, because I was just looking at the future book odds released yesterday by the Wynn race book in Las Vegas, John Avello, and Justify is installed as the 5-2 favorite for the Breeders' Cup Classic. But to show you how things can change within less than 3 months, Bolt D'Oro, who was even money against Justify in the Santa Anita Derby when Justify was the 4-5 favorite, now you have, for the Breeders' Cup Classic, you have Justify at 5-2 and Bolt D'Oro with 75-1. So they were virtually the same price in the Santa Anita Derby in the actual betting, and now a disparity of 5-2 and 75-1 for the Breeders' Cup Classic to be run this November 3rd at Churchill.
Hmm. Well, and the beauty of this, of course, is, John, that with each passing week, people may have the option of going to their local track, or in some cases casino and whatever other facility, and you might be able to be betting that without having to go to Vegas.
Thank you, Dennis Drazen.
Exactly. Speaking of Dennis, by the way, and I'll go over it with Seth in a little bit, Dennis has got a horse that his wife bred, where did it go? Today, is it Uncle Pockets in the fifth race? Second-time starter, maiden 40. On the inner turf. Very tough sequence today in New York, John. John, I interrupted you. I'm sorry. Just you were fleshing out, you know, the way in which the Justify season unfolded as really a running script to the entire Santa Anita season.
Well, when we just watch a 1-5 favorite or listen to a 1-5 favorite and Cracksman get beat, I mean, again, it shows you, you know, the fact that Justify went out there and won time after time. He beat more horses in the Belmont than any Triple Crown winner. He beat more total starters in the three Triple Crown races than any Triple Crown winner only the second undefeated Triple Crown winner. I mean, there's so many things that he has already. I mean, he's only run six times, and what's kind of scary is, you know, we may not have really seen the best from him yet, quite frankly. You know, I was of the opinion that perhaps, you know, these sloppy tracks at Churchill and Pimlico, maybe, you know, he handles it okay, obviously. I mean, he'd won in the mud at Santa Anita, but, you know, I think he's better on a fast track. I really do. And, you know, one of the most interesting comments that was made to you in the coverage leading up to the Belmont Stakes, I thought, was made by Tony Black. I thought he made a very insightful comment when he said that the curse of Apollo might have been turned into the blessing of Apollo in terms of the Belmont Stakes. And I thought we didn't know, of course, whether that would be the case or not until after the Belmont. But the way that nowadays we have the ability to see how a horse is training, unlike before we had computers and video and so forth, but if you were watching Justify in the video from Churchill, in his just not his works, but even his gallops, I mean, there was nothing there to me that indicated that his tank was, you know, being depleted coming out of that Preakness. And and the point that Tony was making was that the lack of seasoning and lack of foundation going into the Kentucky Derby, we've all felt, is a negative, and it was an obstacle for him to overcome. But once he overcame it, then he was a fresh horse for the remainder of the Triple Crown, because one thing that has often tripped up a horse in the Belmont Stakes is the fact that they start to get kind of over the top. They kind of have their tank low because of the grind of the Triple Crown on top of what they did before the Triple Crown. And so, and that's one thing I think that Baffert is mastered, of the many things he's mastered, is the fact that he's able to keep a horse in form through the Triple Crown. You know, I said it before, I have to say it again, that I think the greatest training achievement in American racing history was Woody Stevens' five straight Belmont Stakes, but an achievement that ranks right up there is Baffert having five Kentucky Derby winners come back and win the Preakness. And I think the more people take a look at that feat, you know, as we go down the road and people are told, do you realize that trainer has had five Kentucky Derby winners who came back to win? They all went to Baltimore when they won the pre. I mean, that's an amazing deal, really. I just, you know, and it's interesting to me that Baffert, when asked about that, felt that one of the reasons he has been so successful at that is his quarter horse background, in terms of the fact that he'd have these horses for a futurity or a derby in the quarter horse world, and the trick is you'd have to get them to qualify in a time trial. So you've got to run fast enough to get into the final, but you don't want to empty the tank so much qualifying that your horse is, right, has the energy is sapped for the final. And so by having to walk that tightrope in the quarter horse world, you know, it's something that makes it easier for Baffert to deal with that 2-week turnaround from the Derby to the Preakness.
Now, it's a well-made point, because Baffert, more and more, of course, the flex, the praise, John, it's fewer and far between that we get the old, the old Baffert, that once in a while he still flashes the, the rambunctious and kind of brazen. We don't see it like we used to. He did do it that one day. I think it was when he was in Louisville for the workout that he was nervous about, and I said to him about tying Sonny Jim with the potential of tying Sonny Jim with two Triple Crown wins. And he said, hell, I should have three already. there it is. There's the old Bob. That's the pre-heart attack.
That's right. And the fact of the matter is, he's right, because if all you got to do is go back and watch that Belmont with real quiet. And I have talked about it with Kent DeSormo myself. I played basketball with Kent DeSormo, and one time while we were getting ready for the game, I just mentioned to Kent, I said, "Geez, you know, Kent, you know, why did you open up so much there coming into the lane?" And he kind of took offense, and he goes, "Well, if I had it to do over, I'd open up even more earlier." And I said, "Well, that would be smart, Kent, because it really worked out great the way you did it, because you got nailed right on the money by Gary Stevens." I mean, you know, that just was not Kent's finest hour, and he's a tremendous writer with all kinds of accomplishments. But that was not Kent's, not on his highlight reel. So, and that loss by Baffert to cost the Triple Crown reminds me of Baffert's first Kentucky Derby that Baffert's talked about with Cavanier, because Baffert lost a photo finish to Grindstone, and Baffert was so disappointed and dejected, thinking, "I might never get back to the Kentucky Derby," which in reality is true. I mean, it's hard to get a horse to the Kentucky
sure.
Derby, and that was early in Baffert's thoroughbred training career. And William T. Young, I'll never forget Baffert telling me that he said, "You want to know about a classy guy?" He says, "William T. Young of Overbrook Farm wins the race," and he says, "I get a letter in the mail about a week after the Kentucky Derby saying, 'I know you must be disappointed to have lost a photo finish for the Kentucky Derby and everything, but you know, I think you'll win a Kentucky Derby and so forth.'" And I mean, it was a real class letter that Mr. Young sent
to
Baffert, and of course, look at Baffert, what he would go on to do. But it reminds me that I'm sure Baffert was thinking, when Real Quiet got nosed out by Victory Gallop, Baffert's thinking, "Geez, there was my one chance to win the
Right.
Not,
right.
You know, I may never do this, and I came within a nose, and now he's done it twice." And kind of ironically, that Elliot Walden, the guy that beat him as the trainer with Victory Gallop, is key in that he is involved with Windstar, and it's Windstar that sends Justify to Bob Baffert. So, it's funny how these things all kind of shake out like that, but... it's like stuff you can't make it up in racing, which is part of what I've always loved about racing are these stories. That's why Jim
sure.
Murray of the Los Angeles Times and Red Smith of the New York Times, and these guys loved covering racing, horse racing. They loved horse racing because the stories that we have, they are plentiful.
Well, the season, John, has been tremendous, and created all kinds of good stories, and they still continue to develop for the summer. We'll go to Los Al and then on to Del Mar, and we'll talk to you about everything that lies ahead for the summer and in a couple of weeks. And as always, appreciative of all the contributions the first half and great work with the program and the Santa Anita Morning Line and all the coverage. And we'll talk in a few weeks. Have a good July 4th. We'll talk soon.
Thanks a lot, Steve. I was contacted by the California Horse Racing Board just a few days ago. It looks like I'm going to have some steward assignments coming up this summer again, so like last year. So
very cool.
That nothing's been assigned yet, but they've made the preliminary to see if I was available and would I be interested. And I said, yes, I'll be available, and yes, I'd be interested. So.
Excellent.
So they said you may be headed to the California Fairs in some way, shape, or form. So I've got that. Fortunately, they didn't have anything coming up immediately after this. I really enjoyed listening to Rick Hammerly when he's on with you on Fridays as we've gotten closer and closer to the end of what, going since December 26th to where it's a grind. I mean, there's no way to put it in any other way. So, and I know Rick is just giddy that
Did we lose John? we got cut off mid-syllable. Yeah, all right. Well, let's pull up, and we'll thank John for everything and come back with Seth Merrill. Close out Wednesday at the races. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
This is Steve Cole from the Cole Ranch, a horse farm and training center located in California. We offer folks the chance to join hands with us to own a young racehorse from our farm. We're dramatically different compared to most popular racing partnerships because we don't charge fees or commissions, and we don't inflate the value of the horse. Most racing partnerships buy a horse at auction for, say, $100,000, then turn around and sell shares for $200,000. We value our horses realistically and don't add on fees or commissions. Right now, Cole Ranch is selling shares in a 2-year-old Calbred colt named Mr. Wickham. He's by Heatseeker out of Serena's Echo, our stakes-producing mare, who is a full sister to multimillionaire Thor's Echo. You can get into this horse for as little as $1,000, which will entitle you to a 5% interest. If you want to invest in this horse, please call me at area code 805-990-3669 or visit us on the web at thecoleranch.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I'm a troubled man, changed by the things I do. True, but it's funny how they all remember you. And I could be different, time to do something new. Giving everything, I want to be a happy man. Gotta understand, played by the friends I lose. Who's getting out of hand? Do you think they depend on you?
Band by Jungle, bringing in Seth Merrow, who is at the ancestral home, the Merrow compound there in Maine, and neighbors of the Bushes and of all the great Maine families. Good morning, Seth Merrow.
Good morning. And yeah, the Paysons were right across the, I don't know if it's still the Payson property, but right across the way. So there's a little horse tie-in as well up in the neighborhood. We're actually not in the neighborhood of the Bushes. They're a little down the coast. But we are, as I say, right across from the Paysons. And looking out a nice view right here. You said earlier you could stay in a hotel, but no hotel has a view like this place.
It's true. You got the cove, and it's pretty delightful. And, of course, the question for everybody, what is going on up the road heading toward Freeport and Days, our favorite lobster boil joint? Did they find a buyer? Are they open? Are they closed? What's the update?
I have not been up. I have had fried clams and lobster roll, and this is my third time up, but I haven't gone north yet, so I haven't been up by there to see what the situation is up there. But maybe I'll check this afternoon. Maybe I'll do a little lobster roll or fried clams for lunch and stop up there. I have to head back later today. After I get off, maybe I'll do a little beach time and then grab some fried clams. But we're live from the harness track tomorrow afternoon, so that should be fun.
Oh, up at Saratoga. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, you know, did we talk last week? I can't even remember.
Last week. I think we did. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you reported on your post Triple Crown thoughts.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm at that point in the year where, you know.
I hear you.
And, we're a little punchy.
You know, you're talking about getting some time, and there's nothing like sitting here and getting your head squared away again, as I say, looking out at the water and whatnot. Love to have you again. It's one of those years where the whole family's coming up in like a week and a half, and so there's some early arrivals to kind of clean up and everything. That doesn't happen every year, but you were talking about coming the last few years. It's just too nice a spot to stay open for too many days, so we're always
Somebody's
here.
Well, especially after the winter we had, where, you know, everybody's going to want to take advantage of every decent day, and it finally seems to, you know, really have settled into a summer beat. And
I will say it's beautiful up here, but being Maine, I went to the beach yesterday. Man, that water is cold.
In fact,
they had a little sign on the signboard as you walked in, cold water advisory, and I laughed and I thought, come on, it's Maine, you know, buckle up, folks. And then I went in and thought, oh, okay, I get it.
They weren't kidding.
Yeah, really.
I love it. Well, we weren't expecting, you know, Bermuda or Caribbean when you go to Maine. It's a different I don't mind the cold. You get those funky bugs that annoy you at the beach, and what I don't even know what they are. I don't see them in anywhere else. I don't remember them at the Cape.
No, they do have the no-see-ums and everything else flying around up here in the summer.
Yeah, there's some weird bugs.
Some sun and a little breeze and that blows them away.
Well, the return for us post vacation means one thing, and that's Saratoga. And you can just tell. I got to go into town after we wrap up, but everything moving forward, Seth, and it feels like, you know, the stage set for a nice Saratoga season.
Yeah, you and I talk about it every year. You get through the Triple Crown, and then the countdown begins to Saratoga, and so here we are. You're taking your couple of weeks off. As I said, this is my third trip up here, because once the meet starts, we're kind of all out. And again, we've talked about it. We mentioned it before. We'll be back on Sunday mornings. So we're going to kick off the week before the meet, actually, you know, as we typically do with OTB TV, kind of plug in from the backstretch a few days early. We'll do it this year. So it's just kind of flat out once the meet starts. And, you know, you can't complain too much about it. Hey, we get to, you know, got to work. It's a tough job, but we're at the racetrack at Saratoga every day. So, you know, you can't really complain. But Labor Day rolls around, and I think we're all ready to take a break because it's a long 7 weeks. It's fun, but it's a lot of work. And it's 6 days a week, so it takes some starch out of you, but we're looking forward to it. And as always, when opening day rolls around, it's not just those of us in the media or those of us that are huge race fans. The whole community kind of ties in and makes the most of it. And you mentioned it last week. In fact, we said you stopped at Stewart's and saw the little ad for the season passes, and that was a great addition a couple of years ago by Naira, because, you know, it's a business, and people have to realize horse racing is a business, and like other tracks, Naira, their big product is Saratoga, and so the prices went up, but it really went up modestly as compared to other pro sports. But, you know, after years and years, there was some pushback on that, and I said at the time, they should have some kind of customer loyalty program where you flash a card. And so for the locals who go a number of times it makes sense. Well, they didn't come up with a loyalty card, but they came up with a season pass, which is the same idea for the folks locally. And there are a lot of them who go every weekend or will go a few days every week. That season pass is a great deal. So that was a really nice addition by Naira. It's going to be fun to see this year that upgraded area down at the end of the grandstand. Certainly the artist rendering have looked really nice. I'll be interested to see what that looks like and how popular that turns out. So
it's sold out.
It's sold out. Doesn't surprise me. Yeah.
It's going to be a huge home run. And in fact, Andy was up this past week and he went to see it. And when I saw it, they were still had a lot of work to do, but it's amazing. For those that think, they're gentrifying it, or they're making it, they're ruining sections and making it impossible. The space that was devoted to this new top of the stretch was 16%, the percentage of sale meet long. Only 16% of the seats that have been taken for this section, 16% on an annual basis.
Yeah, I can vouch for that because I'm on the backstretch every day, and a lot of times I'll sit there and work after I'm done on TV in the morning, and I'll work for a couple hours and then head over to the front side, after the third or fourth race. Well, if I'm sitting over there, sometimes I go down to that about halfway point on the backstretch where they have the food stand and the betting windows and whatnot, and I'll grab some lunch. And there's a great view right across the entire grandstand. And certainly those sections will fill up on the big days, no question about it, Whitney, Travers, and whatnot. But, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, you look over in those last two or three sections,
Nothing. We're
always virtually empty. So this is a great use of the space.
Agreed. And people are going to be stunned at how gorgeous it is and how much and then they're going to want to then they're going to be upset that they didn't get a chance to book one once they see it, or if you get invited up by friends and they've got one of the areas, one of the corrals, or one of the, I don't even know what to call them exactly. I mean the little, they're not suites, but they're little
lounge.
Areas. Yeah, lounge area. There you go. You're gonna really. It's an enhancement to the experience. Speaking of enhanced racing experiences, you taking in some Royal Ascot? What's your input?
Yeah, every year I watch a little Royal Ascot. And I heard you talking earlier, and I've heard other people comment about this. You tossed the question out there to Sid about horses going over who could race here. I'm one of these guys who, the more the merrier, because I don't think it's ever going to be an overwhelming number. This year, I think, what do we have, 9 Americans go over? So I don't know whether they were going to enhance that many stakes races over here. But if they win, then they come back, and I think they do enhance races later on. If it's like, there's a Royal Ascot winner running today, I think that adds a little juice for race fans. And I think it works both ways. It adds interest to the international product a little bit if you can have some local rooting interest. And as I say, it's not an overwhelming number that I think is really putting a crimp in the stakes races over here. But to watch Wesley Ward go over with his contingent, and then this year a few others jumping in, I think it adds a little interest from us into an international event, which I think can only be good for the racing game, and certainly I follow it just because such a high-quality meet. I mean, I always laugh. I had Nick Luck on Sunday morning just to kind of preview, and I laughed with him, and it's not just a high-quality meet, but race number one is a great one. It's like our group one. That would be like the first race at Saratoga. Let's kick things off race one on that Friday opening day, the Whitney. You look at that first day with the three grade ones, it's just a lot of fun, and it demonstrates the high quality of the event. So it's fun to watch, and it's fun to watch not just internationally as a racing fan with American entrants, but you get some horses coming from Japan, and certainly over the past few years we've had some Australian invaders that have done very well. And so as a racing fan in general, I like the international game, and so that kind of is a highlight of the international racing calendar as well.
Speaking of high-quality racing, we've got a high-quality sequence today. Did you do any handicapping?
I did. I looked at the pick six, and, man, that is a tough sequence.
Attaboy! Let's dig in. We got 5 minutes, and there's a couple of two key scratches. Take, in the sixth race, take Impassable Creek out, the Randy Persaud, and I'm glad, because that was a problematic horse, and there's plenty of problematic spots in this sequence. And then Christophe Clement has two in that third level allowance, the nominal feature, the eighth race. The Blessed Silence is out. I'm also appreciative of that. But Clement still sends that recent North American visitor week fare. So two helpful scratches, frankly, on a sequence that goes 9 by 9 by 9 by 7 by 8 by 12. Not easy. Back and forth real quick. Seth, the fourth.
I pulled up the fifth first, but I do have the fourth. The fourth, I had a 4-2-9-3. I put Formal Event on top. The Gary Contessa runner who moved to the dirt last time from a turf race and got some class relief and ran a pretty good second, so seems logical there. First, Tomo, the Steve Asmussen runner from Midwest Thoroughbreds, dropped down to this level last time and ran a decent third that I think might have this one primed. The number went in the wrong direction, but I think muddy track, I think get a dry track today, this one could move forward a little bit. And then I went out to the 9, Daria's Angel, who I think with the class relief could get back to some better numbers for Robertino Diodoro.
Well, I'm using 4 in here, and we're common on 3 of them, the 9, the 4, and the 2. But I'll tell you, the 7, I don't know if Stars Will Burn can win. But that race, 2 back, this is an obscure outfit, Vetter, and then Eric Cancel aboard. That race, 2 back, can win. So that horse is the, at least at the, no matter what you're doing, you want Stars Will Burn involved. I ended up putting Daria's Angel on top, and I sort of surprised myself. But to be honest, the race that she ran last time, she chased a hot pace. It's not going to be nearly as hot in here. So Daria's Angel, 9-2. I went 9-4-7-2 and agreed that the 3 you mentioned, Gargan, a little scary. In the fifth, starts the Naira Betts pick 5. Here's a group of maiden claimers. Be Gone Daddy is the horse to beat, but that doesn't get you through the race necessarily. There's a bunch of others that need to be considered. I went 2-6-7-3.
I went 2-8-6-3, and I'm scared about the 4 and the 7, the two first-time starters who are eligible to beat me. But I put Be Gone Daddy on top, Tom's Music, and then Freeload. And I heard you mention earlier the 3, the Dennis Trazen-owned horse. I think the second-time starter, trained by Jason Service, who, geez, he's just on fire. I think this one might be interesting in the second start of the career, the move to the turf.
There's not a lot of turf pedigree in that family. Way more pedigree for that 7, the Gullo, Hustle and Heart. There's more turf in there. I'm using them both, but I agree. I'm going to try to single in the sixth, Seth. Giant Boxer. This is a dangerous spot. There's about 5 horses that look like they're eligible to win. Giant Boxer, though, going turf to dirt and also cutting back for Rudy Rodriguez. And I think it might be the right formula, and I'm going to try to make a stand here.
Yeah, I had at the top of the page competitive. I think this race could go, as you say, 4 or 5 different directions. I went 3-5-1-8. I put the second-time starter from Pletcher on top. Bernardini lived up to that in the career debut, and I think comes back in a good spot. Broke the maiden in the debut for 50, now comes back for 25N2L, so I think fits. Number probably has to go up, but it wouldn't surprise me off a little bit of a layoff if that happens. So again, I went 3-5-1-8.
Second half of the pick six sequence. It feels like the 3 and the 4 get you through the 7th race, Belgian and Mongo Nation, but be aware that Love Your Buttons is absolutely capable here on his best, and he's a B. If you got a tight budget, you want to get through with the 3 and the 4.
I didn't use Mongo Nation. I may regret that. I went 3-1-6-2, Belgian, obvious, but to me, the number one, Light the Vow. I like the move, and this horse wasn't in that level long enough for me to be confident about the move, but I really love the class move, State Bred Allowance into open claimers, when open conditional claimers, even better. This horse did it last time but had trouble, so I'm going to give Light the Vow one more time. And I thought Daddy's Home for Gary Gullo might be interesting with a little bit of class relief. So I went 3-1-6-2.
Pat Kelly is better second and third off the layoff. Fire Key, the horse to beat. If she is ready, she's a single. And I think after that, it gets so squirrely that you gotta either believe or look elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm with you. I had a 3-4-9-1, and the Fire Key is ready. It does seem like it goes through that one.
And finally, the Nightcap. This is a disaster. You negotiate the first five legs, and you find yourself staring at this group of 12, where at least 9 of them can win. 9 horses. If you're a figure user, they're separated by 2 lengths. Who'd you use?
I'll probably box up an exact in here with my 4 because I think they'll be good odds. Another wide open race. I went 10, 11, 4, and 9. I thought both the 10 More Than a Saint and the number 11 Sketsuku for Brad Cox and Linda Rice might be a little bit interesting in the third career start. So I went 10, 11, 4, and 9.
I went 10, 11, or 11, 10, 4, 3, and I'm using 3 horses. So it's the same 3 that you've got on top. 4. 10, 11, hopefully gets us through. Seth Merrow, enjoy your time off and drive careful, and I will talk to you in 3 weeks.
If you're in Saratoga tomorrow, swing by the harness track. We'll make you a handicap, a race or two with us. And good luck to everybody today.
Seth Merrow, everybody, and, of course, John White and Pete for Natal and Sid for Fernando and Royal Ascot, and just minutes away here, and let me go back to my screen. I completely forgot to give you an odds update on this big, bulky group. Let's see how they're betting Wesley, and it is post time, basically 90 seconds, maybe a minute and a half away, give or take. Where is Master Marion? 4-1 right now, and then looks like you've got a Shadwell. Shea Camden is 7-1 with the 10. Afak. Not Aflac, but Afak. And the field is 5-1. You get like 9 horses if you include the field. Good luck if you're playing it, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Exciting daytime Southern California thoroughbred racing action returns to beautiful Orange County with the opening of the Los Alamitos Summer Thoroughbred Meet on Thursday, June 28th. It's 3 great weeks of daytime thoroughbred racing at Los Alamitos. First post is set for 1 p.m. Pacific each racing day. We'll race Thursday through Sunday during the opening week and closing week of the meet, while the second week of the meet will include a special Independence Day card on Wednesday, the 4th of July, followed by racing on Friday through Sunday afternoon. The Los Alamitos Summer Thoroughbred Meet will feature 3 exciting stakes races, beginning with the Bertrando Stakes, highlighting our special 4th of July card. Other stakes races include the Grade 2 Great Lady M Stakes on Saturday, July 7th, and the Grade 3 Los Alamitos Derby on Saturday, July 14th. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider for major daytime thoroughbred racing in America's longest home stretch. The Los Alamitos Summer Thoroughbred Meet opens on Thursday, June 28th. First post is 1 p.m. Pacific. For more info, go to losalamitos.com.
Okay, Bill, Frankie Dettori. And in the background, Firmament, and in the background, Flaming Spear and Robert Winston. So Gabriel it is.